With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. Welcome to the show. I want to thank you all for listening, viewing, and I appreciate it all. Now I'd like to introduce you to Jen Donahoe. Jen's a U.S. Navy veteran, engineer, entrepreneur. She's a mentor. She spent her whole life working career in a man's world, obviously the military. Now she's encouraging women in leadership positions to take their own camouflage off, even if they're the only women in the room. Now, I want to just share this with everybody. There was a study done by KPMG. Incidentally, KPMG just hired my daughter as an intern in the accounting world. And I'm so thankful because they focus on helping people or women in the management ranks. And they did a study of people who were one or two levels below the C-suite and said, you know, how are you feeling? One of the big things that we saw there is they were concerned about the feelings for being an imposter, the only person in the room, all by themselves. You know, they felt more and more stressed as they accomplished more, and they felt like they had to work harder just because we're the only woman in the room. Jen's a specialist. She's lived it. Jen, welcome to the show. I think this is unbelievably important, whether somebody's a man or a woman. Doesn't matter your ethnicity, because I think that, like I told you before, it doesn't matter your gender, your race, how old you are. I think it all adds to the workplace, and everybody should be valued. And I think everybody realizes it be valued. Now, before we get started, I just want to throw this out. Way back when our kids were little, my wife went to what's called MOPS, Mothers of Preschoolers, and she was freaking out about something the kids were doing. And my son would likely like to chew on crayons. So when she got there, she started talking to the other moms and found that everybody's eating crayons, so it wasn't something weird. So what I want to tell everybody is that you're not in this alone. You have people like Jen who can help you through it, who's been there. And to have that fellowship of women or men or people in your own ethnicity to say, hey, I'm dealing with this too. This is big. Jen, again, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
All our listeners, they would love to hear your story. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm an ocean engineer from Texas A&M. Whenever I was about to graduate, I realized that I had all this angst. I had to go out and I had to see the world. I wasn't ready to just go down to Houston and start a job down there with the oil and gas industry. I had to get out and I had to see things. I looked at the different uniform services and found that the Navy was really the best fit for me. Now, going through the ocean engineering program, I was one of only two women in the program. So I was kind of getting used to being the only female in the room. It was usually like just me and Michelle. That was it, you know, the entire time. So whenever I got into the military, first off, there's not that many women in engineering and not that many women in engineering that also want to join the military. And so I was part of the Civil Engineer Corps. Even to this day, we're only about 9 to 10% women. I went to my very first command. So I was out in Guam and had just a fantastic time. If anybody's ever has a chance to go to Guam, they should. But it started there again. One of the only women in the room. Angie was the only other woman usually that was there. You know, it's my other friend. And through the ranks, it's just continued that way. Now, I've gone to Iraq, I've gone to Afghanistan, done expeditionary construction for the Marine Corps, kind of all over the world, just got used to being one of the only females in the room.
That's a great story, because a lot of people have lived that in their own corporate life. I like this statement that was made, and I think you made it. It says, female entrepreneurs, do you lean into the fact that you're a woman? And I think you should shed some light on that, because I think so many people are doing the fake it till you make it stuff, and it doesn't really work. I learned that early on because I was trying to be like the older guys, but I was like, that's not me. That doesn't work. I felt so stupid doing that. Help us understand that and what women can do.
There's a couple of different pieces that you talked about there. And one of them is the, if you're a female entrepreneur, do you really lean into that? And in talking to several of my other very competent friends, and I know through my own life, I had to scrap for what I got. You know, I felt like I had to work harder, I had to work longer than all of my other counterparts in order to get where I was. And what I found is that I put on this camouflage. You know, it doesn't really have anything to do with the military, but I've kind of realized that that's, I think, where I started, is that I felt like I needed to blend in. And so I didn't want to stand out as a female. They usually got too much of the wrong type of attention. And I just wanted to sort of blend in and do my job and just try to do it harder than everybody else. And so I got used to this. It's like, you know, I didn't want to stand out. And so now as an entrepreneur and owning my own company, the question came up, do I want to be a WBE, a woman business entrepreneur? Because my entire life, I had tried not to stand out. And now I'm being asked, should I do this? And I realized there's people out there that want to help us. And we don't have to take it as hard as we have. And so signing up to be a WBE or a WOSB, woman-owned small business, it's actually been really helpful. And it's something that I've realized is like, you know, this is the right thing to do because people do want to help some of the disadvantaged folks that are out there. And it was really hard to try to get to that point. So maybe that's just me and my own stubborn pigheadedness. But that was one of the realizations that I finally came to, is that, well, I do have to start to take off my camouflage and just be who I would really like to be.
And all too often people think to go to the next level, they have to be a certain way. And reality, what got them there is their own authentic self.
Oh, it's really true. I'm telling you, across the board, for a lot of people who are, one in the crowd, they've all kind of gone through this process. And once they realized that they had been putting on their camouflage to blend in, and they started to take off the camouflage because everybody knew that, hey, you know, they are doing a really good job. They can stand on their own. They start to take off that camouflage. Now, all of a sudden, they're just skyrocketing. They're just soaring because now they can be themselves. And that's really what I found through a lot of my counterparts. And it's not just females. It's actually some men that are in female-dominated, you know, organizations. You know, once they figured out, hey, I can, you know, sort of be myself, man, they're doing fantastic now.
Now, how does somebody become a leader in a field that's still dominated by men? And how do we go about building women leaders for the next generation?
That's a great question. I think it all has to start with that groundbreaker. Once you get into a position where you're seen as a strong female leader, you have to realize that now there's other females that are looking up to you. That was one of those interesting realizations that I went through. And like all of these younger females are now looking up to me. And basically they've told me, it's like, we now understand that we can achieve this. Because previously we'd only seen men in these positions. I taught at UC Berkeley and I had women coming into my office all the time, just so glad that there was finally a female professor. That's what it takes. You know, you have to start that momentum. You have to have a couple of groundbreakers so that others are encouraged and motivated so that they can also go into those positions. And it's also incumbent, I think, also on women leaders as well, that we have to really look and we have to make a choice whenever we're looking at people who we're going to hire and put in different positions. And it really depends on that person that you're looking at. I'm not a firm believer in just grabbing a female because she's there. Look for the one who has the most fire and has the most drive. You know, maybe that's the person that looks like you at that time. And maybe you help them out in order to help their career as well.
In other words, finding a good mentor is wonderful. That is so key. Let's hold on a second because I want to talk to you about the essential things you should be looking for in the right mentor if you're looking for that within the organization you're at. And I know you've been through that and I know you've done an interview on it. So that's why I want to talk about it. So we're going to hold on right here. We got to take a break and pay some bills. So stick with us and we'll be right back with more of Jen.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.
Hello, welcome back. I want to truly thank you for tuning in, and I appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. And check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio in New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, live a life of financial and personal freedom. Also, follow us on Facebook and join the Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook page. And if you'd like to get replays, guest gifts, you can always go to the savingwithsteve.us. Now, we're back with Jen Donahue with Lessons from Leaderships. But what we are talking about right now, and I think it's unbelievably important, is to find the right mentor. What are the essential things that one should be looking for to finding that right mentor?
Great question. Just to let you know, I never had a mentor growing up, just because it really wasn't a thing at that time. And so I was a wild little thing. I was going all over the place. I was going to take on the world by myself. Nobody could tell me what to do. And man, I just made so many mistakes along the way. Whenever I got a little bit older, all of a sudden I had some people coming up and saying, hey, will you mentor me? And I'm like, I have no idea how to mentor you, because I was never had a mentor myself. So I started looking into it and trying to figure out, how do I be the best mentor that I could? And I thought, hey, you know what? I'm going to do something even crazier. I'm going to go get a mentor. Yeah, I was like in my late 30s, but I was like, hey, now's the right time. I'm going to try to figure out what this mentor thing is about. So I started looking around me, and I found a couple of different people. One of the things I found in my research was that don't have one mentor, have a board of directors, somebody who's good at different things. Maybe there's somebody who's technically very strong and they could really help you technically in your job. Maybe that's a great mentor to have. Maybe somebody's really good at business. Maybe somebody's good at finance. Maybe you have somebody who's really good at their family life that could be a good mentor. So I think it's really important to look at these different aspects of your life and think, where can I benefit the most at this time? You don't have to get them all at once, but maybe start to bring on your board of directors slowly as you realize what you need to be better at. So I have one that's technical, and he's been absolutely fantastic. And I just went up and I asked him, and I said, hey, would you be my mentor? And that's such a great honor, you know, to be asked that. And he had very, you know, strict stipulations. And he was like, okay, you're going to have to work really hard. I'm going to give you lots of homework, you know, but if you want to be my mentee, this is what you have to do. And that was fantastic. On the business side, I have a mentor as well, you know, very different personality, but I would say try out a couple of different people as mentors before you just lock into one, because it's really important. You are sharing, you know, your life with them and your fears and your weaknesses. And you have to have that professional relationship and personal relationship with them as you go forward. My last bit of advice is don't get somebody immediately within your chain of command. You might want to have your boss as your mentor, but I would probably recommend against that. Maybe find somebody else in the company. And the reason why is that, you know, they have some skin in the game as well. So maybe if you want to change careers, maybe they're not going to give you the best advice because you're the best person they have on the team. And so there's a conflict of interest there as well. So that's my one recommendation, is don't go for your immediate boss. Maybe look for somebody else within your sphere, but somebody that you feel comfortable with.
The main point that a lot of people don't think about when they have a mentor is they have a mentor run vertical, so to speak. And I think it makes a lot of sense to have multiple mentors, because I know I've had multiple mentors over the years in different areas that I was weak in. And I said, I need help here. I love the fact that you talk about having ground rules on both sides. A lot of people think that, hey, I should ask my boss to be a mentor. Well, you know what? They should be a coach anyways. They should be a leader. They should help you get to where you want to go. But having somebody different provides a different perspective. And I think that's wonderful. And when you're playing in the sandbox together, if you can do multiple things, you can do more in the sandbox, which is really important.
Right. Exactly.
When we talk about surviving and thriving through a crisis, do you have a process for this? I know you're an engineer. All engineers have a process. So I was wondering what yours is.
Yes, I learned this really in the military. So we're always ready for a crisis in the military. We're always practicing for a crisis. And I found whenever I was in industry, we really weren't practicing for crises very often. And really, it starts with the planning and sitting down and coming up with all of the different problems that could go wrong. And then thinking about what we call immediate action drills. Like, if this goes wrong, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to practice that. And we're going to get the whole team together. So we're going to practice if this happens, this is what we're going to do. So for instance, if you're on a project and something goes terribly wrong, okay, what are your immediate actions? Instead of freaking out, which I know some people have a tendency to do, don't freak out, because you have a little rule book there that says, this is what we do. I contact this person, I contact that person. And now your crisis isn't as bad because you're clicking through it and you know what you need to do and you know what your team needs to do as well. Now, if you're in the middle of a crisis and you'd never planned for it. So when you're in that type of crisis, as a leader, the one thing you really need to do is make sure that your team is doing what they need to do and that they have the resources and the care that they need. Because they're going through a crisis in addition to everything else that's going around them. And we have to make sure that as leaders, we're taking care of them. Yes, we need to have our eye on our long-term goals. But at the same time, we have to make sure that we're taking care of our people. Maybe they need a different computer. Maybe they need more time to get things done. Whatever that might be during that crisis, make sure that you're taking care of your team. They'll take care of you and you'll get through it. And then the last piece of this whole thing is that you have to debrief at the end. So many of us, whenever we're out of the crisis, we just want to look forward and just go. And we don't want to think about it. But there's so much that can be done with the debrief. What did we do well? What should we improve upon? What could make us more efficient? Maybe there was something that we found during this crisis that if we did this, we're more efficient in the long run. So just take some time to just debrief first before you start to go forward, because then you're ready for the next crisis, because it's all cyclical.
No, I agree, because learn from what didn't work, learn from what did work. Right. And utilize that in the next step. I've seen so many people freak out over stuff that they didn't need to freak out over. Part of this just had to do is being calm and understanding, okay, here's where you're at. Where do we have to go? What do we need to do? And I like the fact that you say, take care. There's obviously expectations, but it's a crisis and things are new. You still need to set high expectations so people can rise to the cause. I think that's a great message that people can resonate and say, okay, I can do this. And I remember the mayor of New York City during 9/11 says, one thing I learned is just be the calmest guy in the room and then do exactly what you just said. Everybody's going to be in a situation. Like, for example, my daughter's going into KPMG. A lot of companies like that, when you walk in the door, whether to be an intern or a new employee, they're going to put you through the hell month or two or three. They're going to have large, lofty expectations. They're going to push you and you're going to have to learn and you're going to have to develop and grow. Otherwise, you're probably not going to be there. Whether it's men or women, how do you deal with the pressures of high performance expectations?
First off, whenever you go there, hopefully you know that those are the expectations that you're going to have to live up to. And then mentally prepare. You might have to be working really long hours in order to meet those goals. You know, go in and study and study and study and study and work really, really hard, you know, during that first startup period, because not only is that going to get you ahead of the curve because you are studying, you are working, you know, so hard, people will see that you were invested. And there's going to be a time where they start to sort of slacken off a little bit on that because they're testing you. But you have to go in, you know, with that idea. You know, it's just like going through boot camp or any type of other training. You know that that's what you're going into. So again, you know, study as much as you can, work as hard as you can, and establish yourself as that go-to person.
So one of the things I do want to chat about is when I was first working in the 80s, yes, people yelled and stuff like that. And I quickly, they, you know, got away from them and moved off and all that stuff. So what would be the advice if you feel the tendency to want to yell or scream or get upset at people?
Go home and yell into a pillow. My first opportunity to lead people, I didn't know what I was doing. And I looked at the leaders above me, just like you were talking about, and they were yellers. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, I guess this is how you lead people. And so I went in and I yelled at my people and it felt horrible. I mean, it's one of those things where that was like 26 years ago. And I still regret doing it because that really wasn't who I was. And so my advice for folks, if they feel like they have to be yellers, you know, maybe that is their personality, but don't fake it just because you think that that's what you're supposed to do. Understand who you are as a leader, and maybe you're a compassionate leader. Maybe you're a selfless leader. You know, maybe you are a yeller. And if you are a yeller, I would highly recommend that, you know, you don't yell at your people because that doesn't do good for anybody. You know, they're going to completely shut off. I saw this happen just actually a couple of weeks ago where somebody yelled at somebody else and you could just see a wall went right up and nothing they were saying was getting through. You know, the person felt awful on the other side. And so it wasn't effective whatsoever. So I would definitely say, don't yell at your people and don't feel like you have to yell at your people just because you think that's what leaders are supposed to do.
Jen, I want to thank you for being on the show today. I know you're a public speaker. I know you're a mentor and entrepreneur. How can people connect with you to follow you, to get help if they need help, or just be part of the girls group?
I can be reached at jendonahue.com. So that's Jen with two N's, D-O-N-A-H-U-E. I can also be found on LinkedIn at Jen Donahue, and on Twitter at Jen Donahue, and on Instagram at I am Jen Donahue. Are you seeing a pattern? So if you just, Google Jen Donahue, you'll find me.
Jen, thank you so much. I love what you're doing. You're spearheading what women have a place to go to know somebody's been through it. I think that's wonderful. I've already sent your stuff to my daughter and she's like, oh my God, I love this girl. So thanks again for being with us today, sharing your knowledge. I wish you the most success and stay happy, stay healthy.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hello, welcome back to Saving with Steve. This is Steve Sexton. That was Jen Donahoe. She was talking about how women can perform in the workplace, and she's helping us through it with all of our coaching and mentoring techniques. It was wonderful. I hope you pass this interview on to your daughters, to the friends that you know that might be struggling or looking for help, or to somebody to connect with in the workplace. You know, I think that was wonderful. So now I'd like to just talk to you about the three main risks in retirement income. When it comes to retirement, there are three areas families need to think about to protect their assets. With people living longer on an average of 65 for men, 63 for females, it's important to address these risks in your retirement and legacy planning. First of all, it's the sequence of return. One of the fundamental pieces of retirement planning is to have a plan for income. This is where you use the three-legged stool. A retirement income plan comes into play with Social Security, pensions, and personal savings. There are also issues when you approach this. Few people have a pension, and there are questions about the solvency of Social Security. That puts even more of a burden on personal savings and assets to fund your retirement. We rely on personal savings. If the market dips right as you're about to retire or shortly thereafter, the sequence of returns or the sequence of return risk could have a negative effect on your retirement because you'll not have the time to rebound if you're drawing off those assets. This is why people came up with the rule of 100. Basically, what you do, you take your age, subtract how old you are, say if you're 65, 35 left over, and that's how much you have at risk in the market, and the other 65% in safer investments. Now, let's look at market risk, the second risk. Most people near retirement remember the downturn of 2002 and 2008. Those were tough years in the market. If you worked your whole life and the market crashed, it's a detrimental effect on your income. You've worked hard and now you're near retirement. You probably don't want to see half your life savings wiped out by the downturn of the market. This is where understanding the difference in investment tools and how they work can help you protect against market risk. An investment can only have two of the following three characteristics. Remember this, folks. Investments can have growth, safety, and liquidity. For example, you had a bank, you have checking, savings, as a money market. The money market's safe. Your assets aren't going to go down. It's also liquid. You can pull the money out anytime, but there's really no growth potential. Right now, you probably get a money market or a savings account at 0.1. Quite frankly, if you have one of those, you're losing money safely due to purchasing power. But if you need the money for next 3-6 months, that's what you have that for. Now, on the flip side, you have money in the market. It has the potential for growth. It's liquid. Hey, everybody likes that. But there's no guarantee of safety, which people don't like. When investing in the market, you can have conservative, moderate, aggressive portfolios. For the liquidity and growth potential, money in the market, you have to give up the guarantee of safety. Everyone with a conservative safe portfolio, there's still a chance you could lose money. Just ask anyone who has money in the markets in 2008 because their 401k effectively turned into a 201k. In fact, I was doing a presentation back in 2008, just after the crash, to a number of lawyers. And one says, I hate you financial people because I tell you I don't want to lose any money and I still lose money. And then I have to explain to him the three worlds of investing. The third leg of an investment triangle is the tools that offer the potential for growth with guarantees of safety. These guarantees of safety come with either bank or insurance companies. To trade off there, it has to be a little bit of sacrifice on the liquidity side. And these investment tools could be things like certificates of deposits. They could be multi-year guaranteed annuities. They could be fixed indexed annuities, indexed universal life insurance. Often an individual gets older and closer to retirement, they move more money to the safety from the growth side, hence the rule of 100. So let's talk about the third risk. It's the risk of longevity. Life expectancy in the US is roughly 79 years old. Given that, it's important to make sure your income and retirement will last as long as you do, which is the number one concern for retirees. This is why developing an income plan also involves developing an investment plan to bring these two concepts together to fight against longevity and ultimately bankrupting your personal savings. In the past, individuals could just rely on their Social Security and pensions, which is also guaranteed income for life. However, these days, fewer and fewer people have pensions, and Social Security by itself will not even cover most retirees' monthly expenses. This is where having an income plan comes into play. And the income plans needs to take into account that people are living longer. There are two strategies to protect against longevity risk and ensure that income will last as long as you do. First, there are options to create additional income streams through fixed index annuities and index universal life insurance, where the assets can be turned into income streams for life. A second way is to rely on drawing down assets such in a way to protect the sequence of returns. In other words, you want to structure some assets in a growth bucket and in a safe bucket. And basically what you're doing here is you're withdrawing your income from the growth bucket when the growth bucket is growing. You have a safe bucket you're allowing to grow. When the growth bucket stops growing or goes negative because the market retreats, you take your income from the safety bucket and then allow your growth bucket to recover. And then when it starts growing again, you start withdrawing your assets from there. By doing so, you could put yourself in a position where 20 years down the line, you can have $200,000 more, $300,000, $500,000 more. Let me put that in real context. Hey, if you started with the $700,000 and looked at the sequence of withdrawals from a growth bucket and a safe bucket and took money out when the growth bucket was growing and the safe bucket when the growth bucket wasn't growing, you can end up with 25% more in 20 years, as much as 40% more assets in 20 years, just by working your sequence of distributions between a safe and a growth bucket. That being said, we always have to take a look at protecting our nest egg. The reality is you've worked hard for what you have. It's important to consider strategies to protect and preserve that nest egg. This is where creating an income and investment plan that can protect against sequence of returns, market risk, longevity risk come into play. And there's one other thing that you probably want to look into that. You want to protect against tax risk. We all know, based off current administration, that taxes are likely to move up in the future. So taxes can be detrimental to a retirement plan. So it's very important that you look at dealing with that tax risk and be very efficient when it comes to your tax planning. By doing so, you can experience more clarity, confidence, and comfort as you move into that dream retirement. So please keep that in mind. Make sure you're having those discussions with your financial advisors, because the reality is a more confident retiree is done through education. And the more education you can get by understanding and getting clarity on those, that return risk, that market risk, that longevity risk, and how it affects you, will make a difference in your life. Hey, I want to thank you all for joining us today on Saving with Steve. We talked with Jen Donahoe. She was outstanding. She's helping women in the marketplace. And just know there are other people out there, whether you're male or female, that can help you get through the things that you're thinking about so you don't feel like an imposter, so you're not doing things that don't present you as the authentic you, because doing that will give you more money, make you more successful, and give you a brighter life. Now, next week, we have some really awesome stuff to talk to you about. So with that, I want to thank you all for joining us today. My name is Steve Sexton, and this is the Saving with Steve Show. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Be safe, be healthy. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.